going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Set your alarm clocks, because we get to wake up and watch some history. For the first time ever, Canada has reached the semifinals. After their first quarterfinal appearance since 1994, they've booked their ticket into playing for a medal. The color of it, TBD, but no one cares right now. They are going to the Olympics. They are going to play at least two more games in the World Cup, and this is their best ever performance at the FIBA World Cup. Their best performance before this was, they've previously finished sixth. Now they're one win away from potentially playing for gold, after there were some scary moments that they might not be playing for anything more this year and have to play in a qualifying tournament next year just to make the Olympics. So essentially, the last four spots have been decided. Canada, the United States, obviously, Germany, and Serbia. But also, the spots in terms of Olympic qualification are all but done and dusted. Eight have been decided thus far. Four will be decided next summer. So who's in? Germany, Serbia, U.S., France, because they're the host, Japan, South Sudan, stand up, and Australia. And, of course, us, Canada. Now, we should, though, show some respect, because the women have placed well at the FIBA World Cup before. They finished third twice. They had a fourth place finish recently in 2022. So, caution, headline writers and social media tweeters, this is not Canada's best performance yet. This is the Canada men's program's best performance yet. And the best performance in the tournament, whether it's for Canada or for anyone thus far, has been Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, also known as him. First player with 30-plus points and 10-plus rebounds in a knockout game in the FIBA World Cup since 1994. There's a lot of since 1994 in these stats. That was a good year, evidently, but it's a good year for Canada. I'm putting it down now. SGA better be in the conversation at the end of this year for Canadian Athlete of the Year. I know there's stiff competition. I know Jamal Murray won a championship, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was an all-star, was first team All-NBA, and has helped drag Canada to the Olympics. But we're going to catch up from some friends that we've had from time. Timothy McAuliffe will join us to give his perspective on this tournament. And for someone who has to stay up late to give you your highlights, he now has to get up early to watch Canada. As thank you, FIBA. Of course, the quarterfinals are at 4:45 a.m. Eastern. And I don't know if that's any better if you're on the West Coast. Like, do you just stay up till 2 a.m. or 1 a.m., depending on where you live? Or do you get up early if you are on the East? Either way, I'm hopeful that the bandwagon continues to grow. The Brooks bandwagon, that is, because a lot of people were putting hate on his name, disrespect him. Now everybody loves Dylan Brooks in this country. And that more people jump on board and support this team. It's been a fun ride, a fun team to watch. So you have been supporting. What are your biggest takeaways from this sleep in your eye, heart palpitating journey that Canada basketball has taken us on over the last couple weeks?
Well, one is that the Blue Jays played at 9:40 p.m. Eastern the night before and I got out of here at 2 a.m. So I basically just took a quick nap and then woke up for the for tip-off of Canada-Slovenia. You know, the funny thing is, though, it was a fun watch. It was a little bit of a stressful watch. It felt like Slovenia were like the 2017 Golden State Warriors out there from three for a large chunk of this game. Of course, Luka Doncic having a lot to do with that, but... Boy, now that Luka has been eliminated from the World Cup and Shea is moving on, I was thinking about this in the immediate aftermath. I bet there are few, if no other players, that are perhaps the odds-on favorite to be the World Cup MVP now other than Shea. Like the Canada could get eliminated in the next round. I hope they don't, and I don't think they will, but let's say they do. Even if they did, I feel like he is likely the favorite to win the World Cup MVP, which is pretty remarkable and indicative of how crazy a tournament he's having.
I don't know what the odds were a couple weeks ago, but I'm wishing I put some money down.
Yeah.
Because if Canada were to go far, it was going to be him, and Canada had a real good shot given what the roster looks like to go far, even though historically they've broken our hearts, whether it was the qualifying tournament in BC or, you know, the late heartbreak in Mexico. We are used to having some pros, and listen, we've had seven pros before, and being excited through the early stages only to slip on a banana peel against a lesser opponent, have the officials frustrate us, have a team get real streaky all of a sudden, and the next thing you know, you're out of the tournament. I think that's the biggest thing for me watching. Still waiting for the other shoe to drop at all times. And I was saying to you off air that when I looked down at my phone after not watching for a second and saw out of nowhere Dylan Brooks walking to the locker room being ejected, I'm like, okay, here we go. This is how the 20-2 run is going to start.
And did you see the boxing gloves thing, though?
I did see that. Okay. Amazing. Like, so on brand for Dylan. But then maybe like 45, whether it's in-game or real-time seconds later, Luka decided he was going to get ejected. And that brought my resting heart rate down a little bit. I will say, after watching this tournament, if I am a executive, general manager, a decision maker, or coach in the NBA, and we wipe the slate clean, and you could just build your roster from scratch and pick players in this tournament specifically to do it, and I get the number one pick. I know the U.S. has the most talented roster. I'm not looking for anything off that roster. No disrespect to Anthony Edwards. I know a lot of people would say, Luka, man, he's that guy. I would pick Shea. And I know you were calling me Travis Homer. You're saying that I am a homer. But honestly, it's less about the player, and both of them are elite. It's more about the temperament. It's more about the culture with which they set. I watch Luka, and it's like, I don't think it'd be a lot of fun to play with him. It's not fun to watch him. And Shea, not only do I think it would be fun to play them, I think it would actually be calming to play with them, because you know you have a guy who was somewhat surprised when he was missing free throws down the stretch, because he's just ice water in his veins. Against Spain, the push-off, step back, not three, mid-range jumper a la MJ against the Jazz. I was like, man, this guy is so, so calm. And so those who listened to the interview on Going Deep, if not, scroll back a couple episodes and like, favorite, share, subscribe, leave a nice comment. When we asked Mike Bartlett, president of Canada Basketball, to give us a word to describe some of his top players, for Shea, the word he used was connector. And I think we've seen that in this tournament. I think he's the guy that runs a group chat. He's the guy, along with Jamal, who said, well, I'm in. And everyone's like, okay, well, I guess I'm in. And then on the floor, he's the connector as well. He's like what you are for the Sportsnet radio network. Just willing to do any job, calm under pressure. But then when it's time for you to shoot your shot, you don't miss.
I think it's a little bit of an oversell, Donovan. But, you know, Shea is the resting heart rate for him must be just so low.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see it. It was Cabby, actually. Was it Cabby who told me that? And I don't know if he told me this for public consumption, so I won't say the league, that a specific league had the idea of showcasing on a potential, you know, secondary screen experience or augmented reality experience, showcasing players' heart rate in-game. So imagine, you know, someone's taking a clutch free throw or someone's taking a clutch kick or a goalie is getting ready for a face-off in their end, up one with less than a minute left. You could see what their heart rate was in-game, which I think would be fascinating because either way, that tells a story. Now, the players of this league, which I cannot name, push back because other than, like, maybe some sort of, like, HIPAA violation, it just allowed them to be criticized more than they thought they would be praised.
Right.
And so if someone dropped a touchdown in the end zone and their heart rate was super high, it's like, oh, you choked, Joker.
Or you have a pitcher is on the mound, a relief pitcher's on the mound and gives up the game-losing home run, and the heart rate spikes. It's probably not good for that guy's PR, I would think.
We'll find a way to use it against you, right? The Skip Baylesses of the world will say, oh, your heart rate was too low and you didn't succeed. You don't care.
You don't care, yeah.
You don't got the clutch gene. The clutch gene makes your heart rate go up 5 more beats per minute. Like, we're terrible. This is what we do. But essentially, to your point, I would love to see what Shea's heart rate is throughout the game. Because either does a great job in regulating his emotions, he's just a great actor out there, or he is unfazed. And I guess when you put in the work, you trust that work, which he says often. But still, I'm on my couch, and I feel like I need to use a meditation app in between quarters. And this guy seems like it's ice water in the veins.
I want to see what the resting heart rate is for, certainly for Dylan Brooks at any given moment when he is like whispering sweet nothings in the ear of the Slovenian defenders, or when he is wearing those boxing gloves waiting for people in the hallway, which is pretty funny. Or, you know what, I'd actually like to see the resting heart rate for Luka. What is his heart rate like? Because I got to imagine it's pretty similar, and it probably is for Shea too, but I got to imagine it's pretty similar to his performances in the NBA too, because he is like that. We were kind of talking off air about this, but we are kind of seeing some of the personalities and play of a lot of the NBA guys, whether it is Dylan Brooks, Luka, Shea, Dwight Powell, who of course is Luka's teammate on the Mavericks. Like, you're seeing a lot of their play in the NBA come through in the FIBA courts as well. And it's funny to see the people kind of consume it to a certain extent, but also see how it works in a international setting, because the refs don't get baited as much. Like, it's a much cleaner game, it feels like, and it kind of sometimes feels like the NBA aspect of it can be, I don't know, like kind of viewed as out of place to a certain extent.
It's so true. I mean, I think Luka's heart rate probably doesn't get too high because he walks back up the court when he's screaming.
That's just true.
At officials, so he's okay. It's interval training for Luka during the game. I'm falling in love with this team. In my various group chats, there is one specific for Canada basketball. There's also a Canada soccer one. The tenor of the two are entirely different.
I can imagine.
The passion's the same. But one common frustration is, imagine what SGA number 2 Canada jerseys would sell Ooh. For right now.
I'd buy one without hesitation.
Well, guess what, Shea? Guess what, Show? You can't be Shea if you wanted to. Because so funny that it's true. His last name is so long that even if you wanted to, which a buddy of mine, shout out to DA, shout out to Dave Wilder, tried to do, even if you go on and try to make a customized Nike Canada jersey, They won't give you that many characters. It's just too much fabric.
That's funny.
So you can't even, you have to just go like SGA if you want, or just Shea on the back. You can't make a Shea Gilgeous Alexander. I hope that's rectified well in time for the Olympics. And now that we know that we're going to the Olympics with a year in advance, I hope we have Olympic specific jerseys. I would love a throwback to the 2000 Olympic jerseys where you had those red circles in the middle with the number in the middle
of
that.
Yeah,
that was a great
right.
look. Shout out to those. But I remember as a kid, I was able to buy USA Dream Team jerseys. And so for this generation of kids, what I want is for them to not have to watch the American team in the Olympics. They get to watch the Canadian team in the Olympics, and they should be able to get yourself a Dylan Brooks jersey. Mississauga, get yourself a Rowan Barrett or an RJ Barrett jersey. Get the throwback or get the real one in 2023, whichever one you prefer, whichever Barrett you ride with, get yourself a jersey. I would love for that to be the case. So hopefully we're doing a Going Deep podcast in the future about the reaction, the style, the story behind the story of the Canadian Olympic jersey.
Maybe we'll be doing it with you on location. Who knows? Maybe you'll be reporting live from Paris next year.
Just put that out into existence. Speak it into truth. We says me.
Donovan, I real quick, before we get to Tim, I have to ask you, what are your thoughts on now that Team Canada has, it's kind of like, for me, it's all gravy now. You still certainly want to see Canada win a medal. Top four finish guaranteed for the first time ever for the senior men's national team at the World Cup. You certainly want that medal, but I think a lot of eyes are rightly going to be on the 2024 Olympics. What are your thoughts on, now that the team has qualified, getting players who did not play in this World Cup on that squad of the Olympics, like an Andrew Wiggins, or I don't know, like a Trey Lyles or a Ben Matherin or an Andrew Nembhard, knowing that they did not play in the World Cup, because of course it would mean displacing people like Melvin Ejim or the Scrub Brothers, for example. I'm curious where you fall on that.
Can't do it. Won't do it. Can't do it. Can't play with them. Can't win with them. Can't do it. I don't know if that's exactly what Coach Singletary said about Vernon Davis, by the way, when he was the Niners coach. Remember that?
I do.
So, not to spoil the fun thought experiment, and I've already done it. I've already gone through the exercise on my phone of putting together what my dream Olympic roster would be if everyone is healthy. And so, you know, it's 12. It's not a 15-man roster like this tournament. It's 12. It is tough. Like, you're cutting legit NBA players. Having said that, nothing in life is guaranteed. But my full understanding is, like, in the pool of players that were selected for this tournament in relation to what was available last year, the summer core will remain. And for those that don't remember, after Canada did not qualify, essentially Nick Nurse said, all right, let's run it back. I will come back. Let's do this again. But we need to get a three-year commitment from our players. And Rowan Barrett was right there alongside him. And lockstep in his thinking and methodology. There are 12 spots on the plane to the Olympics. We got to get there first. So you can't just come in at the last minute and cherry pick and get one of those spots because you're a great player. We need a commitment to get there. And it is an incentive or deterrent, depending on if you see things half full or half empty, to be a part of things early to make sure that you get one of those 12 spots. And so it was communicated that you have to be a part of the summer core in order to be on that Olympic plane. Now, listen, things come up, real life things, contract, injury, weddings, babies, all these things happen often in the summer. Understood. All we need is you to be committed, come to camp. If you can't partake, be around the guys and whatnot. It's Caravana weekend in Toronto. It's not the end of the world. Like, we're going to put you up in Hotel X. You'll be fine. So my understanding, and again, rules are guidelines until they don't make sense anymore. And so they could change. But my understanding is only people who have committed for the entire journey will be eligible for one of those spots, unless because of injury, because of health, a spot opens up, and then essentially the rest of the NBA players that have not committed can theoretically compete for those open spots. So who are we talking about? Well, people are already saying, oh, Jamal Murray. Relax. He's part of the core. He was there in camp this year. He was there in camp last year. He was trying to make the plane, if not the first one, but the second one, and it didn't happen, but rest assured that, assuming he's healthy next year, he is eligible. And so we're not talking about Jamal Murray. We're not talking about Corey Joseph, who was in camp, but had to pull out because of, you know, the demand physically. We're not talking about O'Shea Brissett. Those guys are all part of the core. But when you expand it, the name that, you know, has always been part of this conversation, Andrew Wiggins, who has always been clear, whether there was a summer core commitment or not, he said, my first responsibility is to my employer. I need to live up to my contract. I need to make sure I show up and be the best NBA player that I can. My second responsibility, not necessarily in that order, but it's to my family. I'm away, I don't spend a lot of time with them. These summers go by quick. I need to rest, recuperate, and check in with them. Dragging them across the world in the summer after a long NBA season is tough. I will be there, if called, when it's an Olympic year. I want to represent my country, but I can't do it year after year after year after year. Fine, understood. At least you're clear in terms of where you are. The ambiguity in terms of are you in or you're not in has been the struggle for the program historically, where there have been years where they thought people were showing up to camp, and it's like, Bueller, anybody? So at least Wiggins is clear. But those other names, I think, that are super interesting. Benedict Mathurin, who was a rookie, who was in summer league, who couldn't commit for 3 years, who was in college. And now, all of a sudden, he has a great rookie year. We could really use some of that shooting. Andrew Nembhard, backup point guard. He'd be really good, really heady player. Shaedon Sharpe, an athletic player who, again, was young, was in college, and couldn't commit for the 3 years. So it's not that they didn't want to. They just weren't available. Now,
Leonard Miller, maybe?
Leonard Miller, another nice one. Look at GM show. So now, what do you do with those people? Because there are people who have played before who, you know, didn't commit for the summer core, right? Trey Lyles, Kem Birch, Chris Boucher. You know, those are some names that, you know, I'm sure their agents are sending a you up text right about now, that the brand partnerships will be flowing if you're on this team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But my understanding is locked and loaded with this group, and the additional spots will be for guys who have committed before, like an O'Shea Brissett, like a Corey Joseph, like a Jamal Murray.
I'm very excited to see Jamal Murray suit up. I think it's really only a matter of time, and I have a feeling had the Nuggets not just had an extended postseason run that ended with them lifting the Larry O'B, he probably would have played because, of course, coming off the ACL tear, a lot of injuries in the last couple of years. So I get it. They're not wanting to put mileage on the body. I kind of just wonder, knowing that the Olympics are at a set time, the NBA is likely already preparing for it like they always do. So if, like, knowing that, I kind of wonder if it'll just be a less monumental task for Murray to kind of bundle his Nuggets duties along with his desire to play for Team Canada.
Well, you mentioned the Olympics being at a set time. I think that's why qualifying this summer is so important. And the Olympics are end of July to beginning of August. So essentially, you're in camp mid to early July to get ready for them. But if you're talking about a qualifying tournament with only so many spots to get to the Olympics, now you're elongating what that summer is. Because you got to then, let's work backwards, get into camp and start training before that qualifying tournament. So you're rubbing up against the end of the NBA Finals, which is mid-June, to the beginning of getting into camp, which would then be beginning of July. And you're rubbing up against free agency, where guys necessarily don't know where they're going. They don't know what their deals are going to be. That has to be their priority. So alleviating all of those issues for a group who have players who expect to be playing playoff basketball is really important. We expect Jamal Murray to have a long run in the playoffs once again. We expect Andrew Wiggins, if he's going to be a part of it, to have a long run in the playoffs once again. I expect Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to have some playoff tastes with the Thunder this year, given the fact that, you know, assuming they're healthy, they've got real nice group of young talent. Powell and the Mavericks should be a playoff team. So I think qualifying, obviously, is first order of business, but I think it sets you up real nice to have as many players as possible consider being a part of it next year because the window of time in terms of that obligation is that much shorter. But these are what we call champagne conversations. It's a luxury to be talking about them. I've talked Canada basketball with our next guest when the champagne certainly wasn't Cristal, more like sparkling water. That would be Tim McAuliffe. I want Uncle Timmy's take on what Canada has been and is doing. Up next. Uncle Timmy, Canada will be playing for a medal of some color on the men's side. And I feel like a slow wave is starting to build. But I also vividly remember when myself and young Sheldon Alexander walked down Peter Street from the Score Television Network to the Air Canada Center on some tickets that we got from our homie Tim McAuliffe, who I believe was either doing play-by-play or in-house arena for a Canada basketball game with, I don't think we had an NBA player, and I think it was a big deal that we had an NCAA player. I think like LaVon Kendall was the star of the team, and it was like friends and family. Dylan Brooks has more homies at the World Cup right now than were in at the time the Air Canada Center. I'm somewhat struck to see how far and fast everything has come. Conversation, the play, the support. But I also feel like if we truly are going to call ourselves a basketball nation, we have a far way to go. Because, like, if we're being honest, we're a bit of a Raptor nation. We're not as much of a basketball nation as we pretend to be. I didn't really ask a question. I just said a lot of things, and I want to know how you feel about it.
Yeah, there's a lot there, and I'm gonna try and sort through it. But you're right. Like, I remember it vividly, and I was the in-house PA announcer. I was the poor man's Herbie Kuhn for that Canada basketball game. And there might have been 1,500 people. They put everybody on the same side so it would look like to the cameras in the building there were more people there than actually were. So it was only one side, lower bowl, nothing in the corners. I don't know how many people that is, 2,000, 2,500, maybe tops.
Do you remember who was on that team? Were you like, coming to the line,
LaVon Kendall,
Carl English, shooting team?
Yeah. Yeah, I probably have the chart somewhere. And I remember going to get the French pronunciations because they were playing France at the time. And I talked to one of the assistant coaches, and he just gave me everybody's really French pronunciations. And then after the game, like, a bunch of dudes came to me and talked to me in English that were French. And, like, that's not how you pronounce my name.
Oh, no.
So it stuck in my mind, and it sat there forever. But you're right, man. Like, 7 million people watched the Toronto Raptors play for an NBA title. 7 million people. And I remember at the time, Sid and I went on the TV after, and we talked about how this was a long time coming, but everyone knew it was going to come. And the next step of that evolution is Canada basketball. And let's be honest, what, like 80% of that 7 million, 85% of that 7 million that watched the Raptors would need a roadmap to find Canada, Slovenia today. And that to me has always been one of my passions. And you know this, and I know you feel the same way. Every other country on planet Earth supports their national teams because they're their national team. They know they're not the greatest on planet Earth. There is still joy to be had, even if you're not the greatest on planet Earth. And I think Canada needs to embrace that. And I think you need to look no further than the roadmap that was laid down by Canada Soccer, at least on the pitch. not off the pitch. Please don't follow off the pitch. But on the pitch, the roadmap was laid by Canada Soccer and how quickly it can turn. And how so many people who might not have been in before will be in now simply because the Olympic berth has been clinched.
So true. And the struggle from Canada Soccer standpoint, and we've gone, and we've watched matches at BMO before.
Yep.
You know, they were about to qualify the World Cup, and you know, partied with the Voyagers, and it would be a struggle for me because I used to live right down there by BMO, and Saturday the place is jumping. You know, TFC, whether they were a bloody big deal or bloody terrible, the building was full, and you couldn't move, you couldn't walk and see red. Then Canada would play, and it would be crickets. And I'm just like, you understand that the team that we were fielding for Canada would wax the TFC team. Like, you do understand. Yeah. Like, there are appreciably better players on the pitch, but for some reason, we don't connect. And, well, partially because of the status of the Raptors, but also partially because we've had, I would argue right now, the best player to ever play for our national team. The same is true for Canada basketball. Like, the level of play that we're seeing, I don't want people to not fully appreciate what a luxury it is that guy, like, he's with us now. Like, he is him. SJ, he's with us. And it's not just that guy. There's a couple dudes, and they're rolling with us now. And so it's just been fun. It's been fun to be, you know, in group chats talking about it, and having different friends totally do a 180 on their feelings about Dylan Brooks. But I want to make sure that the country fully understands what we're seeing and understand there's still room on the bandwagon. But here's the thought, and I love to come to you with things I think, but I'm not sure about, and I need to almost work them out. This is sports therapy. Is there a thing where, as a sporting nation, you can only really care about so many things? And so, listen, I have friends who, when Mexico isn't qualifying, they really care, but I don't know if they know about Mexico's team in the FIBA World Cup and the fact that they got out of the group. And even with me, listen, my grandparents and all of Lloyd's barbershop can tell you what the 4x100 team is going to be for Jamaica. But I don't know if they're telling you what the female reggae girls did at the last World Cup.
Right.
And so in terms of a sporting nation, are there at some point only so many things nationally you can care about? And for us, we know that, like, number one will be hockey. Number two will be junior hockey. And number three is a fight between, you know, the women's hockey team when they play America, and then everything else.
No, I think, listen, I think you go through cycles on things outside of everything that everyone knows is going to draw an audience. And that's why it's important for Canada soccer and Canada basketball to capture the imagination and run with it. And I don't think, listen, man, like, I remember when Steve Nash, and it was nice to see him on the broadcast today, talking about his run with Sherman Hamilton, Rowan Barrett Sr., and the rest of those guys, because they captured the imagination of a country. And there were 7 million people watching the Raptors win an NBA title. If this team makes the kind of run that you know that they can make, I'm not saying that there's going to be 25,000 or 20,000 at the Rogers Center for the next time they play France in an international friendly. But you know the Olympics will be the greatest springboard that they could ever have. This is the start of something. And I know that there are people within Canada basketball that wanted to see more support as they started off so well against France, you know, the defending silver medalists. And as they went into that matchup with Spain, the defending gold medalists, I know there are people out there, and it's a slow build, but it will get there. And I saw it firsthand with the Toronto Raptors being there from tip, Isaiah Thomas in a really nice leather jacket, to people saying that this team was taking money away from the Toronto Maple Leafs' ability to sign, to now being worth more than the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, it is crazy how far it's come in this country, and the national team is just the next logical step. Yes, there are millions of things pulling at our attention, and I think we see that day in, day out. Look no further than the rise of F1 in North America and how many people are still watching F1, even though Drive to Survive caught them, they're already off the bandwagon. I realize the bandwagons are quick and people jump on and off really quickly. I don't think Canada basketball is that. I think there are enough people playing. There are enough people who give a bleep. There's a grassroots level. There is a professional level. There is a you-know-the-guy-on-the-team level because we're all kind of 6 degrees separated. And there are dudes from everywhere on this team. It's not just a bunch of guys from Toronto or Sauga City or wherever you want. There's guys from Montreal that will play on that Olympic team. There's Kelly Olynyk from BC that will play on that Olympic team. Like, it's just, this is different. And I think that even more than Canadian soccer, Donovan, I think Canada basketball has more room to grow. One, because I believe in the foundation a little bit more than I did in Canada soccer, and two, because we've seen it at the professional level get to such a height.
Let's not forget, you're talking about Scarborough Blue alumni Kelly Olynyk. Okay, like, come on now.
That's right. He and Corey Joseph tore it up.
Yeah, okay,
Blue.
Right. That's right. Like, that toughness is it was embedded in the borough of scars. Okay, so come on now. But you know what? So this is a great point, because Sho and I previously talked about the fact that, listen, there's only 12 spots on that plane, and those tickets are real valuable, and they're going to be valuable to those individuals, because like what we've seen for the women's soccer team, if you make an Olympics and make a splash, the corporate money that could be coming your way in this country, I believe, is real. How many Raptors have money in a compounding interest account in the Cayman Islands just off of GoDaddy deals alone? Like, if you play well in this city, there are brands, people who want to affiliate themselves with you. If you do that on the Olympics stage in Paris, France, on the channel that you don't need Wi-Fi or cable in order to watch on the CBC, you have Ian Hanna-Mansing saying your name. I think that takes you to another level. And I hope.
Can I?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No. I was going to add to it. Keep going, though.
Well, I just hope that. I hope that that becomes the baseline moving forward, where it is not just for pride, but, you know, from personal fiscal reasons,
it
is advantageous to want to play for Canada, like it is, you know, in some other sports. And I think, you know, if we do this right, we can paint that picture for players moving forward, because it's not only good for them, it's good for other people other than just us, the traditional media, to be out there showcasing and telling the story of, you know, the talented athletes that we have in our country.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then listen, there will be athletes that got Canada to this spot that won't be on that plane because, and just to add to your idea of the GoDaddy money or all the other, you know, Bell puts their name on the front of those jerseys or has in the past, there will be commercials with all of those guys now that they're going to the Olympics. And the other big part that, you know, has always played a factor when it comes to basketball and the Olympics, every one of those manufacturers will be telling their athletes to go. Paris is a Jordan city. Every Jordan represented athlete is going to go to those Olympics. Every Nike athlete is going to go to those Olympics. Like, it becomes a different game, especially if the United States decides to send a good team. And given that it's Paris, and given the situation that we're in over the last few years of, you know, USA basketball, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see a real good team and perhaps even like a LeBron send-off at the London Olympic Games. It will be a scene, and every one of those manufacturers that pays good money to these guys already will be saying, get on that plane, go represent Canada.
No doubt.
And they didn't in the past.
I don't know if it's feasible. I don't know if it's possible, but, and I don't actually know why I wake up in the middle of the night and think about this stuff, because it's not my job. It, like, literally, technically, is Michael Bartlett and Rowan Barrett's job. But I have thought to myself, how cool would it be for everyone whose signature is on that flag, everyone who helped qualify, they come to Paris too. and the whole group is coming, and the whole family is coming, and literally we're using it like a scout team, where we're going to get in good work, we're going to practice against each other. You guys developmentally come, and so it's not like you're just on vacation. You're working on your game with the best players in our country. We're building that family, that community. Obviously, there's only 12 guys who are taking the floor, and only 12 guys who have their neck, you know, with a medal around it at the end. But it would be a cool gesture to just bring those guys to experience it, because they helped us literally get there.
Yeah, you know, at first I was thinking, like, is there the Christian Laettner of this team? Like, the one guy, the Melvin Edgem or the Phil Scrub? Because let's be honest, those would be probably the two names that represent the guy, the every damn time you called me, I showed up guy. And I thought maybe that was like a Christian Laettner spot, like the last spot on the roster goes as an emblematic tip of the cap. But if they had the money, or if someone's listening right now and feels like it could be a cool thing to do to actually tip the cap, listen, I think the number is 33. I tried to count. I tried to confirm. It might be 34 or 35 guys that ended up playing in qualification for the World Cup, never mind to qualify for the Olympics from the World Cup. I think the number will end up being 35. And I tagged them all on an Instagram post. That's a lot of money to spend to get those guys there. But without a doubt, for the culture, and for a culture that, let's be honest, you know, when you and I were young, or younger, you're still young, I forgot. When we were younger, Donovan, there were whispers around Canada basketball that there was some racism there, that there was, you know, some of the guys that should have been there weren't there for the sake of something else. And the culture has changed so much that when you saw, I don't know if you saw the end of this game, when they had the players walking in, as Danielle Michaud, Michael Grange, and Sherman Hamilton discussed the victory over Slovenia, they showed the players walking into the locker room after. And every single one of them that walked in dapped up every single player, from Trey Bell Haynes and Phil Scrub to Dylan Brooks and Kelly Olynyk. They all dapped each other up, and then they folded their jersey and put it on a pile together. And I was just like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into the family part of this, but to me, that was like a real definition of what culture should be. And it was built properly. And you can tell that from things like that. And what you're saying would just put the culture over the top, and people would know that if they ever play a part, that they actually have the tip of the cap that is required for something like this, because it does take a village.
When you were talking about end of game, I thought you were going to reference Dylan Brooks shadow boxing.
Bunch of people.
Yeah. But that was on brand, but that was also, I think, a window, like a glimpse into, you know, the culture that's been built around the group. You know, that the way he was received and welcomed, the way he was ready for his guys who brought it home. It was a good scene. I can't wait for the BTS video to come out to see what the scenes post game were like. Let's, before we go too far, I do think we need to give some flowers to Rowan Barrett, who, let's be honest, they didn't qualify. He's the name that people are talking about.
And he might be done.
Well, that's what I mean. People would question him. He makes the choice in saying, listen, you got to commit 3 years, summer core, which he is going to exclude some high-level people and make it difficult and upset some agents as well.
Yeah.
He gets Nick Nurse in the first place, but before Nick Nurse, you know, is Nick Nurse. And then he gets Nick Nurse again. Then when Nick Nurse leaves, he pivots to Jordy Fernandez at the last moment, when it could have been real easy to be like, okay, one of you two Nates, you guys do it. You guys, paper, rock, scissors, right? We're going to keep it in-house. Roy Ranna, want to come back once again, right? There were some easy choices. He decided he was going to shoot his shot, swing for the fences, and get Jordy Fernandez, which, you know, I so far have loved, and I've loved hearing him talk to his team about his team and to the referees about his team. But Rhone Barrett has a, for me, a much more difficult job than Grant Hill does at this.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, without a doubt. And given that history, I think Rhone Barrett is an essential figure in that culture. And, you know, I think there was like this dance that was, let's just try and, you know, make it so that every one of the best players wants to play for us. And it was like a, please come join us. Look who we have. Rowan had always respect, speaking of the Borough of Scars, had always shout out West Hill, had always had the respect of all the other players. And his appointment was a tip of the cap to that. And I think people were like, okay, now let's see if he can come through other than this is a dude that represents our change in culture. And I thought it was a real tough decision for him to say, we need to be, and listen, you know as well as I do, all of Canada just thinks that you throw on six NBA players and they should beat any international team because the guys don't play in the NBA. And that's just simply not the case. That's not how it works. And evidence was when the Czech Republic beat Canada with some dude from Southern Illinois or wherever the hell that dude was from, the old naturalized citizen. So, listen, they took – it was a lot of guts to do what they did. And I think what you saw in this tournament was the dividends of that investment from Rhone Barrett. And I think you're right. If it didn't work, people may have turned on Rhone Barrett and said, you know, this wasn't the way to go. You should have just begged and pleaded for anyone that you could get to go and not ask for this commitment. But it's that commitment. You saw it play through a bunch of third quarters, a bunch of mental toughness that you know you need to play at the FIBA level with, carried them through this tournament without a doubt so far.
Well, there were so many moments watching where, you know, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop because we've seen this movie before, whether it was in Victoria or Mexico. We've seen how this thing goes. Yep. And this team, for the most part, has been different. Okay, they're going to get frustrated with the refs at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, they're just going to get frustrated and just try to go ISO, I'm better than you ball because I'm an NBA player and you're not. And for the most part, they've been pretty steady.
And can I jump in here, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I jump in here, though? But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can do that.
He can.
Yeah, that's also one big difference. I heard people talking about the ISO ball, and, like, you're right. You are absolutely, positively right. But every time Shai went to isolation ball, he's just better than everyone else. Like, it's been crazy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but I think you're right. But I think this is the Popovich saying to Kawhi Leonard when Kawhi Leonard took the jump. It's he understood that we call a play for Kawhi Leonard for the San Antonio Spurs to score, not for Kawhi Leonard to score. And I think Shai understands, I have to take this over. Now, it might mean I score. It might mean I drive and kick to my cousin for a wide-open three in the corner because the last two trips I've cooked you and I've scored. And he is just so comfortable in who he is and the work that he's put in that, like, okay, listen, you're overplaying this hand, I'm going to take you to the basket. Okay, you're giving me more cushion, I'm going to get to my step-back game. You are setting a double team, I'm going to kick it out and trust my teammates. Like, he just feels so comfortable. And it's weird. I'm going to take this to, like, a life analogy, but we had this conversation about Kyle Lowry. And when did Kyle Lowry take the jump? And you brought this up. And you said, there's something about when people are comfortable in their role. They've got their money. They've got their role defined. That allows them to be a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more carefree, but also a little bit more focused out then because you're willing to live with the results. And Shai, I mean, some of his fashion choices, I think he's a little too comfortable. But Shai, in general, he just seems so comfortable. Me and Shai were talking earlier about we want to see what his resting heart rate is during the game. Because it's lower than mine, and I'm watching.
Yeah, the free throws. I'm going to further this a little bit, and the reason why you and I enjoy talking sports together is because I also bring the things I think. Are we seeing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in his Steve Nash at the Sydney Games moment where you start to realize that this guy could be like really, really, really good. Like not just, hey, NBA, $100 million contract, good. I'm talking like top three MVP, maybe even MVP. Because, listen, the whole basketball world is watching. They're going to get Serbia, and Serbia is really good, and people don't realize how good. But actually, in this city, I think people realize how good Serbia is. But if they get the United States in the final, and Shea has the moments that we've already seen him have, and when he's had them, this might be the jumping off point for not top five NBA MVP, like MVP.
I think so. I think, to be honest, I think he's already better than Nash was at the Sydney Olympics. We saw Nash and we're like, okay, this could be someone who makes the transition and is, you know, locked for really an all-star.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't think we ever thought he was going to be an MVP.
No.
We now think Shea could be an MVP. And Shea already is a lock for an all-star and first team All-NBA. So I think he's already better than Nash was at that time. By the time Nash, and this is why it's so exciting because Shea is still so young, by the time Nash was so good at the NBA level, playing internationally really wasn't an option if he was going to continue to be that good at the NBA level. That's not the case for Shea. And also, like, Shea barely looks like he's working hard when he plays.
Yeah, I know. It's so smooth. It's so easy. And I chuckle as you say it because I remember at the start of last year looking at some SGA's numbers and saying, like, I'm putting him in the MVP race. And people were like, whoa, relax, McAuliffe. Take it easy. Mr. Canada speaking up for the Canadian guy again. I'm like, nah, dude. If he drags this team to this team without Chet Holmgren and what happened when he went, if he drags this team to the postseason, he's getting legit MVP votes. And when I first brought that up on Tim and Friends, the dearly departed, people chuckled at me. There were a couple of people saying, yeah, that's awesome. But I don't know how many people actually believe me. And now, as I say it, you're like, yeah, he's already there, which is an amazing year of growth for a player who is developing into one of the best that we've ever seen in this country, if not the best.
I don't want to rain on the parade at all. And I don't want to look ahead too far. I don't want to be that guy. But
against my window, I can't stand the rain. Go ahead, sir.
I don't want to go chase waterfalls. You want to sing that one too?
No, I'll stay away from that.
Is there a potential whose team is it, whose ball is it scenario with Jamal?
With Jamal team? Murray?
Yeah.
I do think that there is always the potential for that in basketball. I do also think that the personalities of those two players wouldn't lend to that. Now, I think it's really easy to say that now because it's obviously Shea's team. And if you go to the backcourt of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray, I think what you'll see, and this is just me, and maybe I'm looking at it differently, but I thought that the growth of Kyle Lowry and what we talked about in the past and what you just brought up was that he realized he didn't have to be the man anymore. He didn't have to be the guy. He could make serious impacts by doing different things. And then when they needed him to be the man, started game six against Golden State, go ahead, do your thing. And and Jamal's got a title now. SGA's got that point where people are actually saying that this guy is a legit all-star and MVP candidate. I think you might catch this at the exact right time where those two dudes could take turns, because that's when it's really dangerous, right? Like Luka can be as much as Luka wants to be, and you know that there is a limit to what it is, whether it's with the Dallas Mavericks or Slovenia. Same is true about Canada, but you throw a couple dudes that can take over like that, shoot free throws the way that both of those guys do, close out games the way both of those guys do, man, if they do it right, it's so dangerous.
So I did this exercise where assuming we didn't have a core summer group that we're talking about, and you just could open up to all the Canadians What 12? Because not 15, it's 12. What 12 would you pick? And between Ben Mathurin or Shaedon Sharpe or Trey Lyles or Brandon Clarke, like, you're leaving good players at home.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean,
the Nembhard brothers.
Yeah. Without it, I tweeted out something about Slovenia, and someone responded, and how like it's basically the size of Montreal population-wise, and they keep doing ridiculous things in sports. Never mind basketball; they qualified for World Cups and stuff like that. And someone responded with just the Montreal basketball team, and I was like, the just Montreal basketball team beats any version of Team Canada in the, like, it's like Lou Dort, Ben Mathurin, Cam Burge, like
Boucher.
Olivier Maxence, Prosper, Boucher, Kenny Cherie. Like, there's like legit players just on the Montreal team. Like, if you laid them out, Andrew Wiggins, are you going to say no to Andrew Wiggins? Like, there are, and I know there are people out there screaming at their device, their radio, their whatever you're listening on this, screaming, yes, you say no to Andrew Wiggins. But, you know, he's shown up in the past, but he was there against Venezuela and Mexico City. He was there in Victoria. Like, there's a bunch of guys that are going to say, so can I come now? And it's going to be a real interesting 12 that ends up making it for Canada, because just Google Canadian basketball players, and there are some real tough decisions.
Yeah, he's also played really well for Canada. Like, when we haven't qualified, he hasn't been the reason. And he also was the second best player on a team that won the NBA championship not that long ago. Like, the Warriors do not win without Wiggins. And essentially took months off and came back, and it was like he didn't miss a beat in the postseason last year. I want to bounce around to a couple things before we go. And I do love the tournament. I do love the fact, though, that in some ways, the World Cup and doing well here is actually harder competition potentially than what you might see in the Olympics, given the way the qualification happens and the regions with which nations will qualify. But I don't think that's the end of the world, because I do think it's important to grow the game and spread the gospel of the sport, which is why I am happy that South Sudan is going. Youngest country. They made history. They qualified for 2024. Shout out to Luol Deng, who not only is running the program, but is essentially funding it. When he took over as the president in 2019, they didn't have an indoor basketball arena in the country when he took over. And now he's brought in, you know, some naturalized guys, some G Leaguers, and built it up. His former Rockets assistant, and friend Royal Ivy coaching the team up. But essentially, it's a team of refugees and children of refugees that are going to be at the Olympics with all the greatest athletes in the world. It's a great story. This is why I love tournaments like this. I love the Olympics, and I'm not totally jaded towards the Olympic movement. But for you, what's your feeling when you think of a nation like South Sudan being able to watch the Olympics and see, you know, their brethren compete?
Yeah, I wish more people knew exactly what this was. And you did a great job trying to explain how Luol Deng just said, like, I'd like to try and create something here. Let me take it over. Let me bring in a good friend of mine, Royal Ivy. Let me start practices on concrete floors and outdoor courts, that they had to deal with flooding on those outdoor courts when they said, this is 3 years ago. Three summers ago. Like, it's not like it was 15 years ago, three summers ago. And they got all these guys who felt this affinity, who were chased out by the civil wars dating back to the 1950s in the area, that ended up splitting Sudan and South Sudan. And you end up with, Gabriel plays for the Lakers. People might know that name. Family fled to Egypt when he was 2 weeks old. And now he gets to go back and represent the country that his parents grew up in. You know, I married a Persian girl, and I hear her parents talk about wanting to go back to Iran all the time and wishing that they could go back to Iran. And you have a team full of guys representing a country that they were forced to leave. It is. There's a player on the team who lost both his grandfather and his father to the civil wars, and now can go back and play for South Sudan. Mariel Shayok, shout out to Ottawa, born in Ottawa, to a family that has ties there. And we all know growing up in Toronto, there are ties to whatever the motherland ends up being, whether it's Malta, whether it's Jamaica, whether it's, Serbia, Croatia. We've all seen it. We've all seen Italy. I can go on and on. It's Toronto. I'll be here too long. We all know what it means to represent for the parents, for the lineage, for the deeper cause that raised the family, oftentimes chased out for reasons that you did not want to leave. And I mean, there were tears all over the world when South Sudan made it, and not just because it was South Sudan, because people understood the journey, the fight, and to have something represented like this at the Olympic Games. Honestly, for all of the BS that the IOC has become, stories like this are why people fell in love with the Olympics and continue to support it, even though they know that there are those at the top still just with open hands.
From a story of people becoming triumphant without any money to a story of people becoming triumphant because of money. And we transfer from the FIBA World Cup in Canada basketball to Colorado, which, if you're trying to follow, there is literally no link other than the fact that I'm really curious as to what Uncle Timmy's perspective is on it. So I want to ask him before I have to leave. People who know me would know that I love all things Coach Prime. But I have a general read on where you land on issues, but I don't know about this one because you have no problem with people thinking outside the box and pushing against traditional power structures, but you also are somewhat nostalgic, somewhat of a traditionalist, and college football is something that is historically been about the pageantry and the rivalry and the history, and we're rapidly losing it.
And this is not that.
So, okay, so Coach Prime,
it's not that, it's gone.
Your stance on it, because it is even in a victory, it is still very divisive among media, among fans, in terms of where you stand. Everyone is watching, hoping he fails or succeeds wildly. Where are you?
I wish that he didn't have to leave where he was to do this.
Yep.
But once he did, I understood the new landscape of college football would force people into he couldn't have done what he did at any other time because there wouldn't be the transfer portal, wouldn't have been able to just grab guys and go to Colorado and do what they did against TCU. And I think that the college football establishment was reeling because of its own greed. And the conferences are dying because of its own greed. And if Wu-Tang Clan taught us, Donovan, a long time ago, that cash rules everything around me. And what Coach Prime is doing at Colorado, what he did in one game at Colorado was say, okay, now that we know that the playing field has been even for everyone, bleep you. And he pulled it off. And listen, I don't know what it ends up this year. And I think it'll be the greatest story either way, because if he trips, falls and stumbles for the rest of the way, there are going to be a bunch of people saying, I told you so, trying to defend the old hierarchy that is the pomp, circumstance and tradition of college football. And if he wins, all those people that said, I told you so, get to say, I told you so. And I'm here for the ride. Like, I see value in both. I really wish he could have done it before he left. I wish he could have done it somewhere else than Colorado. And maybe the most interesting thing for me will be, like, Coach Prime is one of one, Donovan. And you know that there are a bunch of ADs already saying, who's the next Coach Prime? And they're going to copy it, And it's not going to work the same way that it worked with Deion Sanders.
Well, why didn't they say, well, why don't we just get Coach Prime? Like, the only Power 5 job he could get was a team that won one game that has been a laughingstock since Cordell Stewart.
Right.
So his alma mater, Florida State, has multiple times needed a new coach, and they have not looked in their own backyard. There is, whether it's because he is the story and thus he gets the success, which would threaten some people, or the fact that he's
threatening the whole establishment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, that's what it's about. And listen, like, there are guys that have done it, but they've earned it, Donovan. And it's all horse bleep. Nick Saban's jump jobs. Like, what are we talking about here? Brian Kelly? Like, everyone has done that. And yet somehow there is this, like, gatekeeping around a guy like Deion Sanders. And to me, it's just because he says what he's actually doing. And the rest of them are just, I don't want to call them liars because I think that's a step too far, but they're all playing the game. You know what I'm saying?
But he also didn't slave for somebody else on the way. So it's one thing if you were a grad assistant and you were a defensive coordinator and I screamed at you and threw things at you for years that eventually you learned enough or did well enough that you got your own job and then you're going to do that to other people and on and on and on it goes, but you're just part of this culture and community that we all had to at some point come through, where he just left Rich Eisen at the desk and said, hey, I'm going to do this now. And I'm going to do it really well. And it's like, oh, well, that's an HBCU. And, you know, you did it for noble reasons. You know, post-George Floyd, you wanted to bring some shine to historically black colleges and give kids some pride. And then, you know, listen, there's people within the SWAC who felt threatened by Prime and didn't think that everything that he was doing was good. So, you know, black people as well are not a monolith on anything, especially this issue. But you know, for those who haven't been paying attention, you know, what Tim's talking about, 86 new players on a team that won one game between transfer, high school recruits, and JUCOs. In week one, they play a team that was in the national championship game. Now, mind you, they lost their best running back and receiver, but still.
Yeah, and lost by 60 in that game, but whatever. Yeah.
Yes, but still, we're much better than, you know, the worst team in a conference that after this year may not exist anymore, at least not for playing football. He did that. But I think what is getting lost is, you know, listen, we love the clips on social media where Prime gives an amazing speech and then says, where's my theme music? And then, you know, some Southern hip hop song plays and everybody dances. Like, we love it. We love the fact that, you know, he's giving great quotes in the media. And maybe we don't love the fact that he essentially, first time he met a bunch of kids, he's called them luggage and said his new luggage is Louis and that they can get up in the transfer portal. I mean, I don't love that, but I mean, but I think what's being missed is that, yes, as a player, he was flashy and eccentric, but he also was incredibly smart. Right? You don't play both ways unless you're incredibly smart. And as a leader, I think there's a lot of, you know, sizzle, but there is stake there. He's incredibly smart. He is what I want a boss to be. He hires good people. He lets them do their job. Doesn't get in their way. Now, he may take all the credit, but he lets them do their job. And ultimately, he creates a culture. His team is smart. Last year, in 13 games, only 21 turnovers. Week one, this year, one turnover, six penalties for 13 yards. Like, say what you want about all of the other stuff and the fact that he's got all of his friends, Aikman, Warren Sapp, Michael Irvin coming in, talking to the kids. The team that he's actually coaching is a real smart, disciplined football team. And maybe we just, like, are blinded by everything else. But ultimately, he's actually doing the job well.
No, but that's the United States of America, is it not? Blinded by everything else?
Well, like, we need to lead on First Take and First Things First.
Yeah, so many people are focused on the sizzle that they forget about the steak. Like, it's just, it is almost the epitome of the downfall of of whatever America is to you, that so many people, especially in 2023, Jackson State was 16 in the nation last year.
Crazy.
Right? right? Like when we grew up, when I saw my favorite running back of all time, Walter Payton, play, there was no one ever thought a historically back college could play in a top 25 game, and he got them there. And people, like, say what you will about all of the flash, and I think people too often get focused on the flash. There is substance here, and our problem right now in 2023 is that so many people are caught by the red herring. They're thrown off by the swagger or whatever you want to call it, and they fail to look at the stake. And to me, that might be the definition of Deion Sanders. Like his entire life, it's almost like he's been throwing that persona out at people, and all the while he's leading the Florida State 4x100 team, playing baseball at a level where he's drafted out of high school, then playing both in the NFL and Major League Baseball, and people are still worried about the Jerry Curl, for bleep's sake, Donovan. Like, what are we talking? This is one of the greatest athletes that we have ever seen in our life. He goes on TV and he is whatever he wants to be on TV, throwing whatever. I don't care if it's I don't care what, like, if it's the language that you're thrown off by, if it's the look, if it's the chains, whatever you're thrown off by, just look at the steak. It's been there his entire life. Give him credit, tip your cap, and move the bleep on.
This man told an NFL team that if they drafted him, he was going to want so much money, they were going to have to put him on layaway. Okay? That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah. This has been fun. I owe you so much money for this that I'm going to have to, you know, get a payment plan, not layaway, but, you know, just like, some payments over the course of a year.
Hey, listen.
Like, you know, you could buy a Peloton and pay for it, like, in, like, 20 years. Just, like, they take $5 from you every time you get on
the drizzle or something like that, yeah. You see on a website. Let me just say this before you let me go, and I know you got to go quickly. You've paid me off in spades. Not only did you donate to help my old high school football team that I was trying to help get back on the field, and they are now back on the field. Shout out Senator O'Connor on the Scarborough, North York border for getting back into the game. Donovan Bennett, not only putting his own hard-earned money into the pot and donating, but also getting the word out there and having it ended up being a certain co-host on a podcast that ended up at the school. Now, I know that he saw it on his own, but there's also talk out there that a bunch of people spread the word. And so you've always been good in my books, and we are even, my friend. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, shout out to Enoch Mwamba. And also shout out to the Scarborough, North York border, which for political reasons, like, is apparently going to be redrawn, which is very divisive, which will be maybe the subject of our next Going Deep conversation. What we need to know, because you stay up late for us to get our highlights and perspective, what do you do? Do you just stay up and watch the game? Do you go to sleep and get up early and watch and then go back to sleep? What are we doing for this gift from FIBA, which we knew the United States was going to get the later time slot, but still, 4:45 a.m. for Michaud and friends.
Yeah. I have kids, so I'm used to getting up, as you well know. So there's like a little nap, and then there's a game, and then again today, I sent the kids out with the TV on. To school. They're now getting old enough that they can walk to school on their own. So thankfully, there's been a lot of napping. It's a long way to say I may take a nap when I'm done with you right now.
Steve Nash, when he took the jump in his career, one of the things that he thanked was napping. So you are the MVP back-to-back of broadcasting, my friend. Thanks, Timmy.
Anytime.
That is Tim McAuliffe. You can find him essentially anytime when you're looking for highlights at night on Sportsnet, Sportsnet Central, and as I mentioned, 4:45 a.m. Eastern Friday. Danielle Michaud, Trim Hamilton, Michael Grange in studio, on the call, Dan Shulman and Alvin Williams, Canada with a chance to punch their ticket into the gold medal game. Thanks for listening.